You're not going to use this microphone, right? Oh, you are going to use it?
You're going to use
I'm
it.
I'm going to use it.
Okay.
And I'll move it up a little bit. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming to the first Kennedy Center Statistics and Methodology Core Seminar for this year. My name is Julie Taylor, and I'm the Educational and Training Director for the Core. And a few pieces of business before we get started. If you're not on our listserv to get our emails about different seminars and things that are going on, there is a sheet of paper in the back that you can make sure that you're on that list, and then you'll be notified of any types of functions or workshops that the Core is putting on. And also, I just want to let you all know that later on this spring, May 11th to 14th, Helena Kramer's coming into town for 3 days, and she's going to be giving talks all over campus. We're helping sponsor that, so she's a great statistician, and it's probably something that if you're interested in the issues that she does research in, which is just about anything in statistics, these would be great talks to go to. And I'll keep mentioning this throughout the year to let you all know. And today we'll be hearing from Lily Wang, who is an assistant professor in biostatistics and also a statistician on the Kennedy Center Stats Corp. And she's going to be talking about a new method that she has developed recently for gene set analysis using mixed models. So, thanks, Lily.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you, John. And first, I'd like to thank everyone for coming to this talk. I hope you will find this presentation interesting. And we're going to talk about gene set enrichment analysis for microarray experiments. So first, I will give an overview of gene set analysis, in particular the gene sets and statistical issues involved in gene set analysis, and introduce some popular approaches. And then I will go on to talk about the mixed models approaches, including assumptions and setup and the simulation experiments we did to verify some of the properties of mixed models. And then finally, we will apply the mixed model approach to a diabetes data set and the time course experiments. So gene class testing is called by Allison et al. In 2006 paper. It also has other names such as pathways analysis, gene set enrichment analysis, ontological profiling. The traditional analysis of microarray experiments is on a gene-by-gene base. So we analyze each gene separately, and then we get a significance gene list. One problem with this is that we may have few significant or too many significant genes, and this also requires literature searching, which is very time-consuming. In addition, there may be poor congruency among findings from independent data sets using single gene methods. So this is how the traditional analysis works. So first, you conduct a statistical test for each gene separately, and then you get a significance gene list. And then to understand and interpret the results, we look through literature to understand what biological process each gene is involved with. And the gene class testing methods approaches this problem in a different direction. So first, we group the genes that are involved in the same biological process. So, and then we conduct the analysis at the functional group level. This reveals the biological reasons more clearly. And also, because we are formally testing for subtle but coordinated changes at the level of biological pathways, higher power for gene class testing is gained by combining weak signals from a number of individual genes in the pathway. So this approach is more powerful, and we'll also show that this approach is also more robust, more reproducible across different independent data sets. For more information on the reproducibility, you can see the Manoli paper in bioinformatics. So here is a brief introduction of gene sets. My favorite collection of gene sets is the one from Broad Institute at MIT. They have a molecular signature database. There are several collections. C1 is the collection of gene sets based on genes locations. And C2 is curated gene sets. We'll talk more about that. And C3 are gene sets based on motifs. And these are genes that share the same conserved cis regulatory elements across species. And C4 are computationally derived gene sets, and C5 are the gene ontology gene sets. So for C2, one of the collection in C2 are the canonical pathways. These gene sets are canonical representations of a biological process compiled by domain experts. They were derived from different websites such as GenMap, CAG, and BioCarter. And the other collection that's very useful is the gene ontology gene sets. In biological research, comparison of different concepts and names are very difficult. The reason is a concept can be described using different names, and on the other hand, the same name can be used to describe different concepts. So here is an example. For example, all of these names, glucose synthesis, glucose biosynthesis, glucose formation, glucose anabolism, and gluconeogenesis, they all refer to the same process of making glucose from simpler components. So as part of the solution, gene ontology is a precisely defined controlled vocabulary that can be applied to all organisms. So it's used to describe biology of gene and their products in any organism. This allows for the automated transfer of biological annotations. Therefore, in the analysis of gene expression using gene ontology, the biological region and the co-expression of genes becomes much more evident. So keep in mind that GOT terms are species independent. And there are three sets of ontologies. And the first category is molecular function. Molecular function describes the elemental activity and task performed by the genes. The second set is the biological process ontologies. These describe the broad biological goals for the gene sets. And the third set is the cellular component. This describes the location or subcellular structures of the genes. So to understand what's the difference between molecular function and biological process, keep in mind that the function asks the question of what, and the process asks the question of why. So for example, drive nail, drive stick, smash roach, clown, struggling object, these all answer the question of what. And on the other hand, carpentry, gardening, pest control, and entertainment, these all answer the question of the broad objective. So here are some comments about gene sets. Typically, gene sets with fewer than 5 genes or larger than 500 genes may be difficult to interpret. So in your analysis, you may want to limit your gene sets to certain sizes. And also, you may want to try to make sure you're not analyzing gene sets with the same set of genes. Here are some statistics related to gene set analysis. There are two types of null hypotheses in gene set analysis, mainly Q1 and Q2, called by Tian et al. 2005. They are also called competitive versus self-contained null hypothesis by Gorman and Bowman bioinformatics paper. So Q1 asks the null hypothesis Q1 says the genes in the gene set show the same pattern of associations with phenotype compared with the other genes. And this is the competitive null hypothesis. and test for Q1 depends on all genes on the gene chip. And some examples are Fisher's test and GSEA and some other forms and extensions of GSEA, such as GSA and also PAGE and SAFE. GSEALM is GSE adapted to linear models, and then mixed models approach that we proposed can be used to test Q1 also. And Q2, the null hypothesis Q2 is the gene set does not contain any gene whose expression levels are associated with the phenotype of interest. In Q2, the test statistic depends only on genes in the gene set. So, for example, the global test, global and COVA, and functional class scoring, supervised PCA, which is also developed by our group, and the multivariate N statistic, they test the Q2. And also, I'm going to talk about mixed models approach for testing Q2 a little bit later, too. So we move on to test for Q1, which is the competitive null hypothesis. So the most popular test is Fisher's exact test for testing overrepresentation of a gene set in the differential expressed gene list. So first, we compute a single gene analysis for each gene, and then we get a significance gene list, and then we choose a cutoff for significance versus non-significant genes, and then we classify all the genes in this 2x2 table. The hypergeometric distribution can be used to answer the question, given a total of n genes, where m genes are from the pathway, if it randomly pick k genes at random, what is the probability of having exactly X genes from the pathway by chance? And then adding up the right tail probability will give you the one-sided test for Fisher's exact test. So this would be the p-value for the entire gene set. However, despite its popularity, the overrepresentative analysis has several limitations. For example, it doesn't account for the order of genes on the significant gene list. So we are only counting the number of significant genes. And so this doesn't use the information about the p-values. So this loses information. A more important problem is the results would depend on the significant threshold you choose for that 2x2 table. So remember that in this 2x2 table, we have to classify genes into significant versus non-significant genes. So you have to decide a threshold for this cutoff. And as a result, the Fisher's test is poorly reproducible. And also, what if no genes are significant by your threshold? And another point is Fisher's exact test assumes genes are independent. This may be hard to defend when you have genes from the same gene set, which tend to be highly co-regulated. And a method that uses the continuous evidence of p-values is the gene set enrichment analysis developed by people at Broad Institute. So given a predefined set of genes S, these could be genes from the same pathway, and also we rank these genes according to some difference measure such as the t-test. So we have a ranked gene list, but note here we're not selecting any threshold cutoff, so we're using the entire ranked gene list. And then the goal of GSA is to determine whether the members of S, that is genes from the pathway, are randomly distributed throughout the ranked gene list, or are they found primarily at the top or bottom of the list. So in other words, GSE compares the distribution of genes for that difference matrix. It compares the distribution of the difference matrix for genes in the pathway versus the other genes. And the method GSE used is a modified Kolmogorov-Smirnov test that compares distribution of two sets of genes. And the p-values are computed by permuting samples, so correlation between genes are preserved. However, there are some limitations for GSEA analysis. One of them is lack of power, because the alternative hypothesis for coordinated association in the pathway is more likely to be a location change. When GSEA used the Kolmogorov test to test the distribution change, they may not have enough power to detect the location change. And the other thing is control of false positive. Because GSE is testing distribution change, false positive may result when genes in the gene set have different variances compared to genes outside the pathway. So this is the general picture for testing Q1. So GSEA and Fisher's test are the most popular tests for testing Q1, which is the competitive null hypothesis. For testing Q2, the most popular test that can account for covariates is the global test. So global test tests the global null hypothesis. So this is a null hypothesis we've seen, the Q2 null hypothesis. It asks the question that is there any gene in the group is associated with outcome. So global null hypothesis is no gene in the gene group is associated with outcome, or in the case of time course experiment, it asks the question no gene is differentially expressed over time. So what global and covariate and does is that it also uses permutation to derive the p-values. And for each permutation, global and covariate fits a general linear model, but not accounting for covariance structure between genes. And then it estimates F statistic for group variable in the case of two group, or time in the case of time course experiment. And then it compares the observed F statistic with the permutation distribution of the F statistic. This way, global and covariate can account for the covariance structure between genes. On the other hand, we propose a model using mixed model that tests the central null hypothesis. The central null hypothesis is that the average gene expression of genes in the gene set is not different for the two groups, or the average gene expression of genes is not differentially expressed over time. And our method is similar to PAIT, the parametric analysis of gene set enrichment analysis. But in PAIT, the covariance structure between genes is not accounted for. So our method can be viewed as an extension of PAIT, where we account for covariance structure between genes. So here are some limitations of testing global null hypothesis. Testing global null hypothesis may be too sensitive for some microexperiments. In our experience, when we apply to microexperiments with some moderate signal, we get too many significant goal categories. So this may be that maybe some significant genes is included in many goal categories. So all of these goal categories, when you test, they're going to be rejected for global null hypothesis. And in particular, because global null hypothesis tests whether any gene in the gene set is associated with outcome, larger gene sets, which are more likely to include significant genes, are in particular more likely to be rejected for null hypothesis, for global null hypothesis. So testing global null hypothesis is likely to be more dependent on gene set size, and we hypothesis testing central null hypothesis, which is the average behavior of genes in the gene set with outcome, will give us a list of significant gene sets that are more robust against outlying samples. So I'll show you some experiments I did to verify our conjecture. So now we move on the mixed models approach. So the general picture right now is that for testing Q1, GSE tends to lack power, but then on testing Q2, which is the self-contained null hypothesis, we may get too many significant results. So that's how that's where mixed models come in. For single gene analysis, using mixed models to analyze microarray experiments, Wolfinger and Chu et al. Proposed the methods for analyzing cDNA arrays and affymetrix arrays. And for gene set analysis, we have proposed the method to test the Q1 in the setting of two group experiments recently. And we're now working on a method that tests the Q2, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. So this method is we're still in the process of getting this published. So if you have any suggestions, I'd appreciate it. So So our approach is the mixed models approach. It tests the patterns in the mean while controlling for covariance structure between genes. For experiments with two groups, we test the location shift. For time course experiments, we model mean trajectory over time for the group of genes. And the one strength of the mixed models approach is that it can handle complex experimental designs. For example, batch effects, block effects, size effects, and other systematic effects can be easily handled in the mixed models framework. But on the other hand, it may be difficult in the permutation test setting. And also, it operates within a well-established statistical framework. I'll show you that for single gene assessment, so in addition to identify gene sets associated with outcome, we can also assess single gene and then identify genes that are likely to have large impact on the gene set results, and also we can get gene-specific trajectories over time for time course experiments. Another attractive feature is that as a result, mixed model can improve power while controlling force discovery rate. So here is an example. This is the example in Musa et al. 2003. This is the paper where GSEA method was first introduced. So we have 43 samples from skeletal muscle biopsy from 43 patients on affymetrix microarray data. And among them, 17 had normal glucose tolerance and 18 had type 2 diabetes. The researcher conducted a single gene analysis at the and they found no significant genes between the normal glucose tolerance group and the diabetes group for any genes after multiple testing. And then they did a GSEA approach where they tested 149 prior defined gene sets to see if any gene set is associated with type 2 diabetes. So here is the results for GSEA and mixed model. And both methods identify the oxidative phosphorylation pathway as the most significant pathway. But this pathway was the only one identified by GSEA at force discovery rate 0.2. and it had a nominal p-value of 0.003. And in contrast, mixed models approach for this pathway had a p-value much smaller than that. And also at 5% false discovery rate, mixed model identified 9 gene sets. In particular, glycolysis and glucogenesis and starch metabolism pathway, these are known to be involved with carbohydrate metabolism. Also, there is literature support that tyrosine metabolism is associated with diabetes. So these results make biological sense. So here are more details about the mixed models approach. Modeling the mean structure is relatively easy. So for experiments with two groups, we can write down this model where Y is the gene expression levels, and then mu IG is the mean structure in the data. So I equal to 1 if the gene expression is from a pathway gene, and I equal to 0 is if the expression is from other genes, and J equal to 1 if the expression is from a cases sample, a diabetes patient sample, and J equal to 0 if it's from a control sample. So mu 11 minus mu 10 is the differential expression between cases and controls for pathway genes, and mu 01 minus mu 00 is the differential expression between cases and controls for other genes. And our null hypothesis is that the differential expression for genes in the pathway is the same as the differential expression for the other genes. And the array and the R variables, these are random effects. So they have variance associated with them. And epsilon is the measurement error. So I'll talk about array and R variables in more detail. And for time course experiments, we can use the random coefficient model, which is a subclass of mixed model. And here, Y is still the gene expression level, and beta 0 and beta 1 are the intercept and slope for the mean trajectory of the group of genes over time. And B0G and B1G, these are gene-specific intercept and slope for the gene-specific trajectories. These are the random coefficients. So because both fixed effects and random effects are included here, this is a mixed effect model. And the null hypothesis is testing beta 1 equal to 0, which is the slope of the mean trajectory for this group of genes over time. Well, our first try for modeling dependency between genes is just to use the array random effect. So here we use an indicator variable for each sample. And then this models a homogeneous covariance structure between all observations from the same array. So, but this is very simple to do. But when we submitted our paper, we got this comment. So obviously the reviewer thought this is not enough. This is too simple. So he said we need to account for the complex correlation structure between genes. So in our second take, we used a more sophisticated approach. So remember that for any mixed models, Y equal to X beta plus DU plus E epsilon. And here X beta is the fixed effects part and Z times U are the random effects part. So as we mentioned before, because the random effects are random variables, they have variance associated with them. So you can compute the variance of Y. So variance of Y is Z times G times Z transpose plus the residual covariance matrix. So the first part is from the random effects part. So this suggests that we can use the random effects to induce a covariance structure to model the gene-gene correlations. So in this approach, we first compute a t-score for each gene, and then we let RMD equal to TD times an indicator for the pathway. So here, I don't know why it's out of place. Yeah, I should have put this in a PDF format. But anyway, so we let RMJ equal to the t-score for each gene times the indicator variable for the pathway. So in the analysis, we accommodate all the pathways we are analyzing simultaneously. Then we can see we can have a covariance structure by these equations. So if you do the matrix algebra, you can see that. So here, G is G's gene, and K denotes the K's array, and M denotes M's pathway. So for this type of covariance matrix, so this is for two genes from the same pathway but different arrays, their covariance is modeled by the t-score for the first gene and the t-score for the second gene times the variance components for the pathway. So you can see that if two genes would have very high positive correlation, if both genes have very large t-score, that is, both genes are highly differentially expressed, and they are differentially expressed in the same direction. That way, this product would be positive, and then you would get a high covariance between these two genes. On the other hand, if one of the genes has a positive change and the other one has a negative change, you would get a negative covariance for these two genes. And for two genes on the same array but in different pathway, we use a homogeneous covariance to model their correlation, their covariance. And then if they're in the same pathway and in the same array, then we get this formula. So we have one component due to the fact that they're in the same pathway, and then we have another component due to the fact that they are on the same array. And then we assume if the two genes are on different chip and on different pathway, then we assume they're independent. And then, so that approach is the one that we used in the PLOS Genetics paper. And then when we continued to work on this problem, we found a better approach. This is our take three, the third try. So in this approach, we used the eigenvector approach to model the covariance structure between genes. We thought this may be a better way because there's a theoretical basis for this, and we use real microarray data to show that this approach can adequately account for the covariance structure between genes. So let sigma be the covariance matrix between genes computed using studentized residues from gene-wise linear models. So in the case of two-group experiments, we fit each gene a separate linear model, so the independent variable in the two-group case would be just have a group variable, and then any other random effects or covariate effects. And for the case of time course experiments, we fit each gene a linear model where we have a time effect as an independent variable. And then we get the studentized residual. Studentized residual is just the residual divided by the estimated standard error for the residual. So it's a standardized form of residual. And then we let Ri equal to the product of eigenvalue times eigenvector. And here, using matrix algebra, using the theorem I showed you before, using this theorem, we can actually show that variance of the sum of R has this form. And then remember that by the theorem on spectral decomposition, we know that any symmetric matrix can be decomposed into this form. So if you compare this equation with this equation, what this means is that by including the R variables as a product of the eigenvalue and eigenvectors, we can approximate the original Jin-Jin covariance matrix. So inclusion of the R variables induce a covariance matrix in the marginal model that approximates the original Jin-Jin covariance matrix. So here are some experiments we did using real Macquarie data. The purpose of using real Macquarie data is we wanted to obtain genes with real life correlations. If we simulate, it's hard to simulate gene expression data with the type of correlation you get from real Macquarie data. So we used 12 samples from a time course experiment by Park et al. 2005. So in this Macquarie data experiment, there were two strains of mice and one sample for each time by strain combination, and transcriptional change were observed for developing mouse colon during the embryonic day 13.5 through 18.5. The goal of the experiment was to identify biological processes that are differentially expressed over time. So in time course experiments, the global null hypothesis is no gene in the gene set is related to time. And again, the central null hypothesis is the average gene expression for the group is not related to time. So the goal of our simulation experiments is to show that the performance of mixed models is better than the other approaches for testing central null hypothesis. And also, we wanted to show that the test size is preserved for mixed models for null gene sets. And also, we wanted to test our conjecture that testing central null hypothesis is less dependent on outlying samples. So to do this, we first fixed gene expression data. So first thing we did was we mapped the genes from the gene expression data to the Go gene ontology database. So we linked each gene identifier in the gene expression data set with the gene ontology database. So we grouped the genes according to Go terms. We got 672 gene sets. So fixing the gene expression data, we then generated pseudo time values such that for the first 224 gene sets, we let the mean expression of genes equal to the pseudo time. So we let pseudo time equal to mean expression of genes. So we already know we can know the mean expression of genes given the gene expression data. So for each gene set, for each group of genes, we just let pseudo time equal to the mean expression for each sample. And then for the last 224 gene sets, these ones you cannot see, but for these gene sets, we generated the pseudo time such that from without looking at the gene expression data. So for these gene sets, pseudo time is independent of gene expression data. So these are the null gene sets. And for gene sets 205 through 448, these in addition to generating a pseudo-time that's unrelated to gene expression data, we also generated values for pseudo-gene and let pseudo-gene value equal to pseudo-time value. So in this gene set, only one gene, which is the pseudo-gene, is associated with the time. So the reason we generated the gene set that way is we wanted to make some gene sets by design so that some are false for both global and central null hypothesis, and some are true for both null hypothesis, and then some are false for global null hypothesis but true for central null hypothesis. So here is the result of the simulation study, and MME vector is the mixed model using eigenvector to account for covariance structure between genes. So that's our third try. And MMR student is the one using studentized residue directly without getting the eigenvector stuff. So that's a simpler approach. And then this is global and COVA, which tests the global null hypothesis. And then this is the Fisher's exact test at nominal. We use the nominal p-value of 0.05 as the threshold for selecting significant genes for that 2x2 table. And you can see that, as expected, for testing global null hypothesis, the test size for global and COVA is maintained, and it performed the best among all methods for testing global hypothesis. Remember, global hypothesis is testing whether if any genes in the gene set is associated with outcome. On the other hand, for testing central null hypothesis, which is the average behavior for the genes in the group is related with outcome, global and COVA did not perform well. In particular, the test size is not controlled. So nearly half of the gene sets, the null gene sets, were rejected by global and COVA. So global and COVA is not recommended for testing central null hypothesis. And mixed models approaches performed well for central null hypothesis. And Fisher's test didn't perform that well. As we said before, it loses power because of that thresholding gene, and also it loses power because the continuous evidence or p-values is not used in Fisher's test. So here is the ROC curve for the methods for testing central null hypothesis. So ROC curve is a plot of sensitivity versus 1 minus specificity, as the threshold for cutoff is varied for each method. You can see that the method that uses eigenvector to account for covariance structure between genes performed the best among all methods. And global and COVA, because it's very sensitive, the specificity is not very good for global and COVA for testing central null hypothesis. But of course, it's not designed to test the central null hypothesis. And then to show that testing central null hypothesis is better than testing global null hypothesis, we then look at the stability of the significant gene sets list. So we repeated this simulation experiment 12 times because we have 12 samples. Each time we take out one sample and then we recompute the p-value. This way, for each method, we would have 12 sets of p-values, and then one for each repetition. And then you can see that these gene sets, the first 224 gene sets, these are true positive gene sets for central null hypothesis. That means the average gene expression in these gene sets are related to time. And the middle 224 gene sets, these gene sets, these are true positive for global null hypothesis. That is, in these gene sets, only one gene is related to time. And this last group of gene sets, these are the null gene sets. They are false for both null hypotheses. So I computed, so we have 12 sets of p-values for each method, then I can compute the pairwise correlations for these 12 sets of p-values, and then I took the average. So plotted here is the average pairwise correlation of p-values from the 12 experiments, and then you can see that this group of gene sets is more stable than this group of gene sets, which means that testing central null hypothesis gives you a significant gene set list that's more stable than testing the global null hypothesis. In addition, mixed models gene set lists are more stable than global and COVA, and this also shows that methods that focus on modeling the mean trajectory gives a result that's more stable over variabilities in the samples. And then we applied the mixed models approach to analyze this time course experiments with real time. So first we test, because we have two strings, so we first tested time by string interaction. So for this mixed model, we have time and string, and then time by string interaction, and then we have random array effect and the random R effect from the eigenvectors. As a result, OFDR adjusted p-value for the interaction is 1, so we pulled the 12 samples from the two groups, and at 5% force discovery rate, mixed models identified 27 gene sets that are significantly differentially expressed over time. And to assess the results, the dependence of the results with gene set size, that is the number of genes, and the average rank of gene sets with more than 50 genes is 152. So there were some large gene sets that had a very large p-value. But on the other hand, for global and COVA, when we did 10,000 permutations, it identified 262 gene sets with p-value of 0. So this shows that when you test the global null hypothesis, gene sets are very likely to be rejected just because the larger gene sets, they're more likely to contain significant genes. In particular, all gene sets with size greater than 50 had a p-value of 0 by global and COVA approach. So in addition to identifying gene sets associated with time, the mixed models framework also allows one to do single gene assessment, in particular impact analysis for single genes. So here we assess the impact of each gene on the result of gene set. So a set of observations related to each gene is removed, and then we refit model, and then we use the Cook-Stee statistic to quantify the change in parameter estimate for fixed effect relative to its variability. So here the fixed effect is the beta 1, which is what we are interested in. So beta 1 is the slope of the mean trajectory over time for the group of genes. And then another thing we can do with mixed model is it allows to estimate of individual gene trajectories using the best linear unbiased prediction estimates. These are shrinkage estimates that borrow information across all genes in the gene set, and extreme means are attenuated by the knowledge of the underlying variabilities. So here is an example. I just picked a small gene set. This gene set, I think, ranked the number 5 on the significant gene set list. And my collaborator is looking at it to see the biological background for this gene set. And so it has a FDR adjusted p-value of 0.005. So in this gene set, most of the genes are downregulated over time. However, there is an outlying gene, and it's 66307. So when we estimated the FLOPS, which is the best linear unbiased prediction for the gene-specific trajectories over time. So these are the estimated slopes for each gene. You can see most of the genes had a slope around negative 0.4. Just this gene, his 66305 by ensemble gene ID, this gene had a trajectory that's very different from these other genes. So we know that removing this gene would have a large impact on the estimate of mean trajectory over time. So the Cook's D for this gene is very high, is 3.3 or something like that. But for the other genes in the cluster, is not so high. So we can see that Cook's D can be used to identify genes that has a large impact on the gene set. So here is the summary. The mixed models approach tests patterns in the mean while controlling for covariance structure between genes. And we have shown that testing central null hypothesis give results that are more interpretable. So rather than rejecting a lot of gene sets, you can get more sensible results. And it's also more robust to gene set size. So by modeling the mean trajectory over time, and also the testing central null hypothesis makes the result less dependent on variabilities in samples, so it's less affected by outliers in the samples. And also, we have shown that using real gene expression data set, type 1 error rate for mixed models is preserved. And the strength of mixed model is that it can accommodate complex designs of experiments. In addition, under the mixed models framework, single gene assessment can be done using the best linear unbiased prediction and the influential diagnostic procedures. So some future research, we can also integrate other sources of information such as evidence of association in Go. So not all Go categories are created equal. Some are created from computational analysis. Some are created from gene expression experiments. And some others are created by literature review. So we can account for this type of evidence. Also, we can account for topology of pathways because some genes may be at the beginning of reaction or some genes may be at the end of reaction. So this topology of pathways right now is not accounted for. And in addition, probe level variabilities can also be accounted. And another important topic in this research is the DAG structure of Go. Go has a very Go categories are generally very highly correlated. So how do you adjust it in multiple testing setting? There isn't a clear answer right now, and I don't know the answer. And also, pathway information can also be used as predictors. As we have seen, pathway information are more robust across different experiments. So using pathway information may be better than using genes as predictors for prediction analysis. So actually, we have another paper that just got accepted recently that uses pathway information for survival prediction. And so acknowledgement, this work is not possible without the support and encouragement of my statistic colleagues, Russ, Bing, and Steven. And in addition, Peng Cheng also helped us with some of the collaboration projects. And also, we'd like to thank the neuroscience experts, David, Christine, and Evan, for providing valuable opportunities for us, and also providing valuable comments and insights for the gene set analysis method. Thank you.